Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is a show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I have learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Did you ever think your life was going nowhere and you wished you could start over and do it again differently? Did you ever wish you had a second chance? Our guest today did get a second chance. Several years ago, he almost died of a heart disease, and when he recovered, he decided to change his life. Our guest is Danny Creed, author of A Life Best Lived, A Story of Life, Death, and Second Chance. Danny is a six-time winner of the Brian Tracy Award for Sales Excellence. He is an internationally sought keynote and business development workshop speaker and trainer, a noted expert in all phases of selling and marketing, amongst other expertises. Danny Creed, welcome to the show, Danny.
David, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, it's great to have you here. You know, let's start out. You had a close call with death. You know, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, quite honestly, I was born and raised in Kansas on a small farm, and I now live in Phoenix, Arizona. But my mother was 86 years old and worked full time up to 85. She was a pistol, a good old country girl, and she had taken sick and to a point where she couldn't take care of herself. She couldn't walk, she couldn't feed herself, but yet she had a stroke and couldn't take care of herself. And I decided to go back and see her. And you know, the spirit of these people just drives me crazy. I'm a professional, a master business coach. And I went back to Mom one day and visited her. And I said, Mom, how you doing mentally? And she goes, she had a lisp because of the stroke. And she goes, I have a goal to dance by Christmas. And I go, now wait a minute, I can't even get 30-year-old customers to set goals, and here's Mom, she's 85. But she was slipping and she was going fast, and I had to make a decision to go back and visit her. I came back to Phoenix, and I was headed to Vancouver, Canada for a speaking engagement, and I was headed to the airport with my wife. And it was weird, David, I didn't feel bad, but I felt like I was dying. And I just told my wife, I said, look, let's skip this flight. I can get another one. Let's go to the hospital and just see what's going on. And I walked in. She parked the car. I walked in. They did a quick EKG. Doctor came back. And I'm just still remembering things. This is only a year and 4 months ago. And I remember now the doctor came in and said, Dan, you have 48 hours to live, give or take a few hours. and it was the give and take that messed me up, you know. But at that point, things moved really, really, really fast. They said, you got to have at least a triple bypass. And off I went. And my wife hadn't even came in for parking the car yet. But long story short, very, very short, I went through the process, and gosh, it's just craziness going on. And in the meantime, my mother back in Kansas had really fallen into almost a coma by now. And I didn't know this. And I'm going through the process, and they're looking for veins to harvest and all this crazy stuff. And, you know, and David, at this point, I know from a spirituality standpoint, I know that's what your show's all about. At this point, you know, I said to myself, and I speak on this a lot, and I asked the question of the crowd, so I'll ask your audience, if someone told you you had 48 hours to live, give or take a few, what would you do different?
Yeah.
Now, what I'll say is, there's nothing you can do different. You might call somebody and tell them you love them. You might say some prayers, but there's nothing you could do. Believe
me, not in 48 hours when you're lying there. There's not. Yeah, and but besides, you're not feeling well either. So
yeah, and you don't know if you're coming out on the other side. You know, so
right.
So what I did was called my children. My wife was there. I called my best friend and said, "Look, I love you, but I don't know whether I'm coming out or not because this is scary now." We started again. Things moved very fast. They got me into surgery like almost immediately. And we right before I went out, I don't know what your listeners believe, but my mother visited me, and she was sitting on a rock, bathed in blue color, and she looked right at me. She laughed all the time, and she said, "Danny, don't worry about this at all. You're going to be just fine. You're going to come out the other end, absolutely great."
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Danny. This you say right before you went out. So yeah. So you weren't out yet. You were sitting there fully conscious, and she came to you.
Well, it was one of those fully conscious as much you can be, Esther. They gave you the part of the anesthesia that just made you relax. You know, I was kind of that twilight stage.
Okay.
And I still remember it. I was wide awake, but she came to me, just laughed and said, "You're going to be just fine." And then darkness. I mean, it was pretty quick. Being, it's just over with. And 7 hours later, I came out of surgery. They put me in a room, and I hadn't yet woken up. And again, this mom came to me three times, David. And the second time, of course, I'm moving the timeline along real fast here. But the second time she came to me, I was I had yet to wake up in ICU and. But I remember my mind just clicked on, and I was someplace other than there. I was in this void, black void, and I'm standing on a platform. There's no color, it's just black. And then right in front of me, just like in a church, there was a stained glass window with a hole in it, and it was bent in. And I'm sitting here going, "Where am I and why am I here?" You know, it's just all I just remember is just empty void. And I'm standing there, and I heard my mother's voice a second time. And she said, "Danny, you're not supposed to be here. Get out of here. Get out of here now." And I remember I backed up and I dove through this hole. And that's when I woke up from my surgery. And I'm fighting, David, man. I'm rattling, my arms are strapped down to the gurney. I'm fighting and I've got the tube in my throat and I'm just ready to rip it all apart. And thank goodness the nurse was there and he calmed me down and got the tube out. And then about 10 minutes later, he comes up and says, "You know, this doesn't happen a lot, but I have to ask you, you've been laughing out loud. And that doesn't happen a lot in ICU." And I said, I don't know. I guess it was because mom told me I'd be okay. And so I'm there, and they say, "Well, it looks like you're going to survive. It looks like everything's good." So they called the doctor went down to see my mother, then the surgeon, see my wife and my children there, and my best friend, and said "Danny's going to be okay. He's going to be just fine. He's out of surgery, you know, the worst is past." They pick up the phone and call my sister, who was holding vigil with my mother back in Kansas, a little community county hospital. And my sister said, "Wow, you know, prayers are answered." She left to go get some water, go to the bathroom. When she came back 4 minutes later, after I came out of surgery and said I was okay, my mother died. And it was like she was hanging around to help me. Mom passed, and we checked the death certificate a month later, and it was exactly 4 minutes from when they called that mom moved on. And they didn't tell me that for 2 days, but I kind of knew. And so the antithesis of the book was that my surgeon came down the next morning. Now, keep in mind, David, if some of your listeners have had this happen. I was an hour and a half after waking up from surgery. They were in my room saying, "You're going to get your rear end up and you're going to walk." And I go, you're nuts. And I go, no, you're going to do a lap around the nurse station here. And I did. But, you know, so the surgeon came in the next morning. He's a very honored surgeon. And he came in and said, look, I looked up, kind of found out who you were, Danny, and as a speaker and a coach. And he goes, so I'm going to challenge you. And he says, the challenge is this. When I give someone a second chance, when I save their life, give them that second chance, many, many, many people do not. They never honor that second chance. They go out and start smoking and drinking again and eating bad cheeseburgers and all the things we shouldn't do. And he said, because they think, well, I got a new heart. I'm okay. He says, so what are you going to do to honor your second chance? And boy, I should have written, bought a, I should have bought a franchise of sticky notes, because I was in the hospital for 7 days and I had these sticky notes everywhere. Oh, how, what am I going to change? How am I going to, and this is what I teach, you know, and what am I going to do? And I'm searching for this big, incredible solution. And what I realized, David, was that it's not the big stuff. It's not the big stuff we have to do. And out of this, I came home and kept working on it. And I had, in my recovery, which was 3 months, and I'm sitting in my office. I could barely move for, you know, first couple of weeks. And I'm sticking notes in. I'm starting to realize one big thing. And that's that most of us don't honor a second chance that we don't even know we have. That people, anybody, most people sit around and wait for somebody to award you with a second chance, when we have the power to give ourselves a second chance and a third chance and a fourth chance. But we don't do it. We don't make up our mind that we're okay. And, you know, and it's things like, it's all based on fear, you know, fear of taking that leap. We'd rather sit around and complain than give ourselves, saying, I can go out and do this. I'm going to go do it again. You know, it's like, you know, I'm poor. I was raised poor. I don't have enough college. I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm afraid. I've never done that before. So we don't take those steps to give ourselves that second chance. So, and the more I looked at it then, I thought, you know, if everybody had the clarity, if you had the clarity that the way things are right now, you're okay with, great, that's okay. You don't want to change if you're okay with that. But you know what? If you have that clarity and you're sure of that, and that everything's okay, shut up then. I'm sick and tired of listening to people whine and gripe and blame the government and this and that, when it's they have the power to change. So
Danny, you saw a sign that said life is best lived than feared, and I'm sure that that cut into your, you know, one of the reasons that your book is titled Life Best Lived. But what does that mean? A life best lived than feared.
I'm glad you asked there, David. That was the third time that mother visited. I was I couldn't sleep, because it's an unnatural act to have your chest split open and work on it. So what they don't tell you is your back is damaged, muscles and bones, and I couldn't sleep, and I had some after effects of the anesthesia, and so I would be at home and I'd try to go to sleep, and I'd hear demons voices saying, you know, you should have, I call it the what if demons, you should have died, you know, what's going on, you know, this, it's all over with for you, you know, just nasty stuff. And I sat there one night, 2 o'clock in the morning, couldn't sleep, hadn't slept in about 4 days. I was giving up, and I'm a pretty tough guy, you know, and I was giving up. I didn't know what to do. And so I said, okay, I'm going through a checklist. I've meditated, I've read positive books, I've watch positive videos, I've tried to think good, but every time I go to sleep, the demons come back and they just gnaw and they won't give up. And I said, you know, the only thing I really haven't done, and I can't imagine why I didn't, but I hadn't said a prayer. And so I said, now I remember the prayer, it's in the book, and it's pretty much, Lord, show me some way to help me go to sleep, thank you, amen. You know, it was pretty quick. And about 3 minutes later, I fade off and I start, the demons start coming in, I hear my mother's voice again, and it was on it, and she said, read this now, and I could tell her she had long, thin fingers, she always wore a ruby ring on her right hand, and that was the fingers I saw wrapped around a yellow piece of paper. Why it's yellow, I have no idea, but on it, it said, read this now, and the sign said, life is best lived than feared. And I thought, and my mind went, oh my gosh, I got an answer to the prayer almost immediately. And I woke up, I jumped into my bathroom, and I wrote this down wherever I could write it down. And I sat down, and I go, wow, and I laughed out loud, woke my wife up. And then I cried. And then I went to sleep and slept like a baby. And I got up the next morning, my logical self then sat down and said, oh, I probably heard that someplace. It was in my mind. And I looked at every book I'd read in the last 2 weeks, couldn't find it. I Googled it, couldn't find it. So I truly felt that this was a sign from, mother, this was a sign from answer to my prayer. But I started thinking about that. I was fearing life, and I can't do that anymore. I have to grab it, as I always do. I have to grab it. I say, look, what time we do have, I'm going to take hold of this sucker, and I'm going to ride it as hard as I can, and I'm going to take advantage of my second chance. And then I realized that in my business coaching practice, that this might have been the coaching gods were speaking to me as well. Because so many people that I work with don't achieve the potential that they have over a lifetime because of some fear in their life. And so when I went back to work, I started working with my clients, and we usually have a year-end planning session, and I didn't have time to do that. So I just sat down and I said, look, let's identify one fear that kept you from going to the next level in your life, whether it's life or business. And David, it was the most amazing planning sessions I've ever had with my clients. And the results in the past year were just breathtaking in working with them. Because once we overcome, and some of them are conscious fears and some of them are unconscious fears, but life is best lived than feared was the last time mother came to me through that purpose, but it was a big one, man. And so then I said,
it's a great story, and it's a great piece of advice. Fear clearly keeps us from doing so much in life. Do you think that we have a life plan? Do you think we come here with a purpose?
I absolutely do. The thing is, a lot of people don't recognize the signals. They don't recognize the opportunities, the road signs that are put in front of us to say, you might want to get off on this ramp for a little while. And I think people become satisfied. And I wasn't trying to be funny. I mean, I'm just so sick of people complaining, but yet they've never sat down and say, I've got a second chance to do this. I have the power to go back to college. I have a friend that I've urged to, and she went back to college at 45, got a teaching degree, and has now taught almost 30 years, still teaching. You can do it. I believe there is a plan there. Absolutely.
How do you find it?
Boy, that's a good question. I think part of it is clarity. Part of it is, do what you, and I'm really big on clarity and working with business owners, and that clarity is just sitting there and doing things that you have to do, but also understanding what you really love doing, what you really enjoy doing. And that's what drew me to, business coaching and speaking. I love to stand up in front of somebody and communicate, maybe give them an idea, and I recognize that, and I started working on it. Whether, again, you have the money, a background or whatever, we all have the ability to start. I spent last night with Brian Tracy, the famed speaker and author, and he started out very humble beginnings. I mean, he lived in a car for a while, and now he's the number one business development, personal development expert in history. He's written 80 books, and you hear stories like this. So I think part of it, how you find it, is just be really aware. Get your mind in a point where you're not saying, woe is me, but you're going, you show me a sign here, you know, and let me go try that. And don't be afraid to go try it. So it's being aware of what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. I think that life unfolds, and yes. And it's not an accident how it unfolds. I think we get a lot of help from the spiritual world, and what they'll do is they'll open doors for you, and you can't be afraid to go through the door, and I think if you do that, you'll be led through the purpose of your life, and I always think that if you want to know what to do in life, you do what you know is right, but you don't want to do.
Yeah.
And if you do that, it'll lead you right where you want to go.
You know, there's a great saying that I teach my clients, and it was a definition of, I've heard it used as a definition of a number of things, determination, discipline, but it's doing what you have to do, when you have to do it, whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
And what that does is get you into areas to see, you know, just eliminate the fears and go see how hard might that be. I've never stood up and spoken in church. I've never stood up and spoken in front of groups of people. But how do you know you can't? Looks scary, but how do you know you can't? And there's ways, things you can do. You can take action. You can join Toastmasters. You can go give speeches at Cub Scouts. I mean, you can do anything to try it and see where you're at, you know. But it's doing what you need to do, when you need to do it, whether you want to or not. And that will help unfold. We found that as I was doing my research for the book, what also came to me during all those sticky note moments was that there were 11 things that just popped out, that it wasn't the big things we need to do to find that, David, you know, that you're talking about. It was what the big things were, how somebody can give themselves a second chance. They can start with these little things, but the reason we don't do a lot of those little things is simply because we blow them off. We just say, well, that's too simple. But the key is, if you have the discipline to do a lot of things, and in my case, 11 things, I'm telling you, I can help anybody get at their second chance and do it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's the little things in life. You know, you don't have to beat the world into submission. You just can't let the world beat you into submission.
That's right.
And it's the little things. You know, we don't realize how complicated our lives are. I mean, if you look at, you know, the responsibilities that you have, just, you know, taking care of your family and working with them, a job, working with all your peers, all of these things. We live very complex lives.
And just
functioning at that level adequately is a huge task that we take for granted. We take ourselves for granted.
Well, and we've got just smoldering greatness within all of us. But see, one of the things I work with people on is to understand how they define success. Because I think that's a big key. Because how I define success is much different than how my family back on the farm in Kansas defined success. My definition is much different than yours. And we're held up against other people's standards. I work with a lot of people on goal setting, proper goal setting. And the big problem with goal setting these days is that most people will go through an entire lifetime achieving goals that someone else set for them.
That's a good point.
You know, and so I really try to work with people and understand what you want out of it. What's your definition of success? Because it may be to, you know, be with my children every day. I had an executive that was about to lose his family that I was working with, and once he realized that his goal in life was to take a vacation with his 7-year-old girls that he had never taken a vacation with. That was his definition of success as it progressed. It wasn't more profitability. It wasn't more bottom line. It was, he told me, quote, he said, you know, I'm profitable. I'm making lots of money. I just haven't ever taken a vacation with my kids. That's my definition of success now. So I think if we define it, it's easier on ourselves if we can define what it means to us. And you know, the heck with what anybody else thinks it should be. You know, in fact, I teach there's seven levels that we need to set goals in and understand our definition of success, and one of them is business. So business goals should not dictate.
Yeah, let's talk about those seven. I like those. Why don't you go through them?
I'll see if I can remember them at this time of the morning.
I can help you if you want, Danny, because I have them in front of me.
the seven goals, the seven areas I ask people to set goals in is one is business, one is personal, is financial, another is personal. I tell people, I said, look, be a little selfish. What would you like to do just for yourself? Do you want to go fishing, you know, in Florida? You know, and you've always dreamed of that. Well, you got to set that as a goal. The next is spiritual, is health, is charitable, and I'm missing one.
Family.
Yeah, that's the top of my list. So, yes, and that's family. And there's seven areas there.
And that's interesting because people don't do that. People do not break up their life into various categories and say, hey, you know, I need a goal. I need to decide how I want to do each one, because balancing our life is so important. And that's key. Talk to me a little bit about spiritual. What type of goals would you set from a spiritual perspective?
Well, and you know, that's a great question, David, because that's the one that most people have the hardest time with. Now, when I look at a lot of the others, I say, look, fill up a page, because the process I use is incredible. But we have, you know, fill up as many goals. The question is this, and I'll apply it to spiritual as well. If you had no restrictions, if you had no constraints, none whatsoever, how big would you allow yourself to dream? How big would you allow yourself? We're in a society today, we've forgot how to dream. So when you look at spiritual, the one thing I always say is, this doesn't need to be, for some people, it means religious. Other people, spiritual has a whole different meaning. I've had people, some of the examples of people, what spiritual meant to them is, it's everything from, you know, I'm going to get back to church. I quit going. I'm going to read the Bible. And then it gets on to things like, and many, many people will go this direction once they think about it. You know what? I'm going to sit in a corner every day for 15 minutes and meditate. I'm just going to try to clear my mind and refresh my body and my mind in a way of being with whatever universal mind, whatever my spirituality will bring to me, but I'm just going to sit quietly in peace for 30 minutes, for 15 minutes. I was talking to Brian Tracy about this, and he goes, you know, take a bet any day on a particularly businessmen and women that are running hard, and bet them any amount of money that they can't sit in a dark room by themselves with nothing going on without their cell phones for 5 minutes and stay focused on nothing. You know, so spiritual can be just meditating and just going, look, the world is here. I love. And another one of the things, my point of the 11 decisions that I came up with as I thought through all this is a very spiritual deal, and it's number 8 of the decisions, and it's wake up every morning that I vowed I would wake up. I make it a habit to find and express gratitude and gratefulness for everything and everyone around me.
That's a really good one. We have a tendency not to do that, and being grateful, I think really, you know, I think it restabilizes your
right.
You know, your psyche, and it allows you to put yourself in a place and realize you can't have a victim's mentality when you're grateful, and it really has a way of bringing you back down and grounding you, and I think that's a really good thing.
You know, in business coaching, we work with people a concept called victor-victim. You know, and we have a line down the middle, and it's, are you a victor? Are you thinking positive? Are you keeping yourself positive and strong, or are you always a victim? And unfortunately, in our world today, we have lots of victims. All you have to do is turn the TV on. You know, go read the newspaper this morning, and everybody is whining and crying and griping.
Right, everybody's a victim.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, it's the government's fault, or it's, you know, what, right. you know, whatever. But let me go back just for a moment, because this one, when I talk about the book and I do seminars on the book, about the book and helping people, that number 8 is the one that has resounded more than anything, gratitude. And so I ask people, I say, you know, how many of us woke up this morning, threw our legs off the side of the bed, and sat there and go, all right, I got another day. Well, you know, here I am. Thank goodness I got the other day. Thank you, know, and I'm ready to go. And then I go out, what I've done since this, I make it a point every day to go out and find somebody doing something that I can be grateful for and acknowledge them. When we were at a restaurant last time where the waiter, that you made a special point to go, thank you for your service. I appreciate everything you've done here. You know, it's tough. Sam Walton, who founded Walmart stores, I'm a big Sam Walton fan. He was famous for teaching, and he said that this is one of the concepts that made Walmart so big, and that is he made all of his managers walk around the stores looking for employees doing something right.
You know, that's really good.
Yeah, and because what happens? We've all been in situations, see the boss come and go, ooh, gosh, I've got to hide. I'm probably screwing up here. You know, I got to hide. But he actually had a hat that came from a book from the 80s, a management book written by Tom Peters. Sam Walton walked around with a hat that said MBWA, and that stood for Managing by Wandering Around. And he'd have all of his managers walk the stores every day looking for someone doing something right. If they're doing something wrong, they chastise them privately, not in front of everybody. But they went out in gratitude, in a feeling of gratitude to say, thank you, you're doing a great job. And the store exploded.
Yeah, that's really good. Let's go through some of your 11 points, because... Okay. Let's start out, and we touched on a couple of these.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Now, the first one is never let fear stop you.
Yes, that's right. Life is best lived in fear. Every day I honor my second chance. And again, I think if all your listeners would just sit down and be really honest with a yellow pad, lock yourself in the bathroom, and go, what's the one or two things that just scares me to death that I can make a statement and a move towards changing, towards overcoming that, because you can do that. Number 2 is goal setting, and we talked a little about goals, but you know, just do it. Here's some scary statistics. 70% of our society has absolutely no goals. 70%, 28% says they have goals, but they're not written. And any expert in the world, Brian Tracy or all the way through, will tell you if it's not written, it doesn't count. It does not count if it's not written. So 2% of our society, some people say even less, has written goals of some sort. It's written down on a piece of paper. You can look at it and read it every day. 2% has it, and there's some, Harvard has done some research that believe it or not, that they'll say that in that 2% of people with written goals, that they control about 95% of all the income in America, that everyone else works for them. You know, so it's really important, you know, and again, I work closely with my clients and said, we're going to set goals. I'm going to force you to set goals, and we're going to set them in those 7 areas, and we're going to work on these. Even if we just have 1 or 2 very clear ideas in each of those, it's going to give you, back to your point where we started, it will give you a business plan for your life, if nothing else. It'll give you a business plan for your life, and will help you then open your mind. It clears the air, and all of a sudden, it's the force for the trees. It's the fog on the water. You know, it's it's all of a sudden you can see these opportunities are right in front of you, and you can make a decision whether you that might be a good thing to learn and start, and you start veering off, and if it doesn't work, you can readjust, but at least you have a plan. You're not just running in the walls all day, which most of us do.
Yep.
Another good one that comes up in the workshops is number 5, which is I will prioritize my time. Now, this is a much bigger conversation, but again, most people we find, and of all the clients I've coached, I've got over 8,000 hours of log coaching personally, and I'm telling you, most people are busy but not productive. And if anybody, by the way, ever comes to teach you about time management, run them out of the office. Get rid of them. Because the latest research is showing it's not about time management of managing, because you're just managing everything. Important things and not important things. Things with high consequence and things with no consequence. But if they're ready to talk to you about how to prioritize the things you think you need to do, and prioritize them, and then only do the highest priority, the highest consequence things in the day, then you can, once you prioritize your time, then you can manage the time around doing the highest priorities. There was a German philosopher by the name of Goethe who said, never let the most important things in life be at the mercy of the least important things. And by the way, he said that in 1740. So this isn't a new concept.
Right, exactly.
But exactly. If you can manage that, your life will be better.
Yeah. Another one I really liked is your number 3. Purpose is to help others achieve their destiny.
Yes.
I mean, that's really service to others. Talk about that a little bit. That's a really good one.
Yeah, thank you. It says my purpose in life is to help others achieve their destiny, and through that, I achieve mine. The great speaker Zig Ziglar, many of us might have heard Zig. He paraphrased the Bible. That's where this kind of paraphrase is from. And Zig would always say, my goal is to help enough people get what they want, and by doing that, I'll get what I want. It's the difference between if you're in sales, looking at a customer coming through the door as a commission check versus helping them and then be rewarded with some commission. So I believe that my purpose is to, and that's why I enjoy what I do, and I've been doing this about 12 years, my purpose, I believe, is to help you and to help your listeners and help my clients and friends and people I randomly meet on the street. If I can give them one idea, if I can understand their goals, if I can help them get to where they're going to go, I'm going to get a reward. And much of the time, it's going to be money. But it's a reward, not the cause, not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I want to help you, and I believe I'm going to become a better person by helping you. And you can do that by volunteering in your community, by just here's the key, dude. Here's the real key. You want to get down and dirty on this? We are a society who has forgot how to listen. Nobody listens to anybody anymore. Nobody asks questions and sets and concentrates and listens to what the other guys say. I say it's the lost art in worldwide business. No, everybody's forgot how to listen. And if you're the guy that sits down there and says, look, I'm really interested in understanding what your needs are, what's going on in your life that I might be able to help, or know somebody that can't, your life will change if you just take that attitude. Basically, again, if you stop talking and you start listening, life is going to change.
And that is so true.
Yeah. Well, it's really important.
Yeah. I'll tell you, another one of yours was be a person of action. We talked a little bit about that, but why don't you go into that a little bit more?
Well, it's number 7. It says, I'm a person of action. I choose to make a difference now. I think so many people, we've gotten used to having someone else do it for you. The government, your boss, we're so familiar with saying, yeah, okay, well, we'll put it off. that goes back to time management almost too, and priority management. That I'll just put it off. I'll procrastinate. You know, most the researchers have said procrastination is the greatest cause of heart disease and frustration and everything, because most deadlines and things like that are simply a cause of procrastination. So I'm just telling folks, if you have a chance to get something done today and it's a high priority, do it. Your life will change again. Just do it. Don't say, oh yeah, I'll do that the night before. How many times do you do that? Putting together proposals, studying, cramming. The whole idea, concept of cramming we now find is just, it's just ridiculous. Psychiatrists and mental researchers, and I have some friends in Philadelphia that are some of the best in the world of brain research and how the brain works and such, and they prove it every day that it just causes more frustration. So if you know what you need to do, and you know when you need to do it, just do it.
Yeah. You say, you know, you bring out the words proactive versus reactive. I think that's, you know, and of course those are preached in business all the time, but I'm not sure people truly take them to heart. You know, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. That's a point dear to me. So finish your thought, please.
So I was just saying that we react to the world, and that's part of your are you going to be active or aren't you? You know, if reacting is not really, it's not prioritizing your time. It's not it all of these things, but if you're proactive, you start thinking about, well, you know, what are my priorities? What do I want to get done? You know, what do I want to do now? That all plays into the type of action that you want to do.
That's correct. You know, you're letting the world, think about it this way, by being reactionary, you're letting the life happen to you.
Yes.
Versus taking some control of the life you have left. And again, I don't want to get weird, but, you know, I've been there and back, and I'm telling you, you know, we have a short time here on the planet, and it's all about making memories and creating memories and having memories. You know, it's about living the life as best you can rather than just sitting there going, well, let's see what happens today. I have a friend that does that, and he's miserable, and he doesn't know why. You know, and I keep saying, dude, you can't. I'm around my grandson too much. Pardon me. I said, dude, you know, but he's. I said, look, man, you can't just sit there and say, let's see what happens today, because he's never happy, because nothing ever happens in his life. You know, no one ever, you know, nothing exciting ever happens. He doesn't do anything. I go, well, you're waiting for the phone to ring. You know, it's like the guy who prays every day to win the lottery. You know, and he prays and prays and prays and prays, and then someone else wins it, and he goes out and shakes his fist in the sky and, you know, and yells at God and said, you know, I've been praying every day to win the lottery, and lightning bolt hits him in the head, and the voice of God says, man, you got to go buy a ticket first.
Yeah.
You know, and it's an old joke, but, you know, it's so right. True. You've got to move forward. You've got to move. You've got to understand, what do I need to do today? What can I do today to change the world? And your world, again, understanding what your definition of success is, your world might just be your children. It might be grandparents. It might be a coworker that's having a tough time. But that could be a world that you can change. You can have an effect on.
Yeah, what is success changes as you go through life.
Absolutely, as it should.
As it should. And you have to take it a step at a time and say, okay, what's important to me now? And then you go get it.
That's right. And again, I just want to make sure everybody understands, this doesn't have to be a series of big events that makes the newspaper. This could just be a quiet helping somebody through a doorway. You can change people's lives pretty easily, pretty quickly. You know, and that's what you start looking for, because it all piles up. It all adds up. If you look for the concept of karma, I mean, it's a real thing. man. I'm telling you, I've been around the world and seen things, and it's a real thing, you know, and it just builds up, you know. But it also comes back to my point nine of my 11 decisions, you know, and that is I've got to forgive others. I've got to quit holding in things, and more importantly, I've got to learn to forgive myself so then I can go back out and help people. And if people sit back and think about all the grudges and things that started out little small and then they just exploded into great big things, the things that they did in their life that they remember and they still are frustrated with, boy, let it go. Life's too short. Stop and use that energy for doing something great. Use that energy for getting your rear end off the couch and getting out and doing something. I, you know, quit playing video games all afternoon and go out and play catch with your kid. But do something, you know. It just kills me to see people sitting at a dinner table in a restaurant, a family of four, and all four of them are looking at their electronic device. No one's talking.
I know what you're talking about there. I've commented on that more than once. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. One of the things that you said is, how should we deal with our mistakes? And I think that was kind of important. Why don't you go through that?
Yeah, I'm a student of other people and what they've done, and you know, and the famous CEO of Jack Welch used to say, when somebody would come into his office with a problem or complaint, he'd look at him and say, "What's the reality? What's reality?" And he would then say, "What's your solution? Because if you don't have a solution, you're just griping. So come in, give me what your solution is, then I'll give you my opinion." So when I got out and started doing all my startups and working with a lot of businesses and people all over the world, you know, it just got to break it down to keep it simple. So I have a rule of one, a four-step rule. If you just hold your hand up in the air and hold one finger up, so step one is what happened. Be really honest with yourself. What happened on any problem, any issue, any mistake? You say, what happened? Clearly, what was the reality around? Number two, why did it happen? Analyze what happened. Be really honest. Stand like the king in his clothes. Stand naked in front of a mirror and go, okay, what happened? Why did it happen? How will it never happen again? Raise your third finger. What happened? Why did it happen? How will it never happen again? Now we're going to analyze it and we're going to create a solution. And then raise that fourth finger, bend your hand, and wave bye-bye because you have an answer. The only true problem is where something happens and you just let it happen again and let it happen. And David, we both know, you know, the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting the same result.
Expecting a different result. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what most people do with life. You know, they just make the mistakes over and over again. So anybody that comes to me, if I coach you, I would teach you within the first 2 weeks what happened, why did it happen, how it will never happen again, see you later. And I'm telling you, it changes lives.
It does, because, you know, it goes back to another point that you bring out in the book that, you know, when we fear things, a lot of times we'll fear, well, if this happened before, it's liable to happen again, so you're paralyzed. But if you try to analyze why it happened, you can get rid of some of that fear.
Oh, yeah.
By thinking it through and trying to understand exactly what's going on or what went on.
Well, it's interesting. That's a great point, because it's interesting if somebody will do that really simple exercise. All I have to do now is hold up four fingers with clients, and they go, "Okay, okay, what happened? Why did it happen?" But when you do that, sometimes you stop blaming stuff because you realize it really wasn't anybody's fault. It's just too easy to, you know. Again, we're in a society where it's just easy to blame somebody.
Yeah, I know.
And if you just stop and go, well, what really happened? Why did that happen? Well, probably because I didn't make the phone call soon enough.
Yeah, exactly. And we always know. Well, you know, you want to know where your problems start, just check the mirror and you can find out where most of them were. Yeah. Hey, we're running out of time, Danny. Any recent news from your mom we don't know about?
Well, we've had my sister actually. Again, my sister has been visiting mom. And your listeners will appreciate this. We thought we'd went through all of her stuff and everything else, and my sister was cleaning her house one day, and she reached behind the couch, and there was an envelope there, and it was, again, this is really kind of, but there's an envelope, and it was mom's handwriting, and mom said, my sister's name is Penny. She said, Penny, you're going to be just fine. You know, it was like, I don't know, just appeared. And then on the envelope was her finances, because in the hospital and everything else, she was basically broke by the time she passed. And it just was her money. When she sold the house, and she did this thing and that thing. And then she said, I bought a new car, which she did before she had her stroke, and I did this. Then at the bottom in her beautiful script handwriting, she goes, sorry, kids, I spent it all. And my sister called up and she was crying, and you know, so she brought it out. I'm gonna frame it, but you know, it was just like mom has popped up for her three or four times, and it's weird, just little notes being in the chair, and she doesn't even remember mom writing, even being in this house she's in. And so it's just, she really is spending time now with my sister, I believe, taking care of her.
Yeah. Hey, we have run out of time. Can you tell people how they can get in touch with you and what you're up to?
Yep, thank you. Yeah, I I'm in San Diego this morning, and I'm speaking at a conference of international coaches. I do a lot of speaking, and of course, a business coach. I coach, work with people all over the world. And I also have created a webinar based on the book, and it's really interesting because it's really taken off with people like yourself, your listeners, as well as veterans groups. The whole idea of second chances really resonated with veterans groups and church groups and spirituality groups, and so it's really interesting. And I feel like it's taking me in a little different direction now. My speaking and some of the motivational stuff I've done, it's just taking it in a whole different direction. So that we're doing that, and we got another book on coming. I've been privileged that the book has done well, and so just a lot of good things. My life is changing. You know, at 60 plus, my life is continuing to change, and hopefully we're changing others. And so if anybody wants the book, you can find it. You can just go to my website, which is realworldbusinesscoach.com, and click on the button that says book. And that'll take you, and there's an audio book, finished at Christmas and came out, and there's the hardback, and then there's an ebook. Or you can just go to Amazon.com and type in Danny Creed, and it'll be there. And that's also my website, so if anybody wants to see what I do, it's there at the Real World Business Coach.
Okay, thanks. Well, thanks for being with us, Danny. It was great.
David, thank you. It's a great interview, and I appreciate it. And everybody, have a great life.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.